you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
Upon decaying every foul wicked spirit in the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, that door of a on The Ooze, spread out.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really tap into have a serial time
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm TC Downey, aka Beast Zeno. Dan Dredd hasn't made it to the switchboard yet. I'm not really sure if something's up. I haven't seen Dan in a couple of days, really. Well, no, that's not true. I saw him posting on the forum earlier. Probably just having a little bit of technical difficulty or running a few minutes late, but whatever is whatever. Tonight is open discussion anyway. So I'm going to go ahead and throw out the 347-989-1371. That is the call-in number, 347-989-1371. All right, so while we're waiting for everybody to get themselves loaded up in the chat room, let me see, something new, something cool. Last week, Jason Terrell announced that he was running a silent auction with some really cool propaganda that he, not necessarily propaganda, but knickknacks and pieces of artwork that he had laying around the house, that it was time to get moving along. So I want to remind everybody, if you want to kind of help support The Ooze, go put in your bids on those items in silent auction. I know myself personally, at least one item has been bidded on. I haven't actually gotten a chance to ask Jason about it for the past few days, though, so could be one way or the other. Anyway, it's open discussion tonight, 347-989-1371. Let's talk about what's on your mind. I'm going to tell you what's been pressing the front of my mind. This state of things out there. That's what's been pressing my mind, because I can't really think to myself what solution might be enacted to, kind of riddle us out of this current situation. I mean, you can't just make debt disappear. It takes time. And it's not just, people that are in debt. The country's in serious fucking debt. I think the world's in debt, honestly. China might be one of the only countries out there right now that's not completely sunk, and I'm not necessarily sure that that's the case. I've been there a few times, and, they're not exactly living on the Ritz. The problem... The problem that I'm seeing, and actually the problem I'm seeing in the chat room, is apparently Lehi isn't hearing anything. Yeah. Let me see. What do we got? Anybody getting sound? Testing? Who can hear? If I'm rambling to myself and it's not even being recorded, that's even worse. So it's bad enough I'm pulling up Paul Valentine here. Not really sure what the deal is, but, there ain't no drama here or whatever. So my mind is this. My whole life, I can remember, hearing different songs of protest and everything from, the hippie movement to, hell, there was even some of it in the dirt rock, hair band, heavy metal fucking days. And think about, bands like Tesla, Skid Row, I mean, all of them put out songs. And I got to stop for a minute and kind of say, thanks, Frenchie. The Big Caps are awesome. So that's good. That's good stuff there, man. I'm just putting my mind together because it seems like generation after generation, you know, people scream about how unjust things are. People shout about how, you know, the man's keeping them down. But, you know, them, what happens to actually acting? I mean, we've got ourselves convinced that, you know, as one person, we can't really make a difference. And, you know, I can definitely see that the odds appear to be insurmountable. You know, so I guess what's really been going on in my mind is this. When, you know, is it the same cycle as what we saw in, you know, the French Revolution or the War for Independence here, or the Industrial Revolution? I mean, is it just when enough people have had it that you finally get a big enough group of people to do something about it? I mean, I'm not talking about burning down, you know, tea ships and stealing tea off of them, or, you know, whatever, causing, you know, major mischief or mayhem. I'm talking about legitimately just throwing your hands up in the air and refusing to participate anymore. I mean, isn't that the best protest you can give? Is if everybody just, like, simultaneously refused to participate, what would really happen then? That's what I want to know. What would happen? Got a call coming in right now. I'm guessing this is French because of the area code. But Ronnie, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's going on, TC? Well, I'm hearing you talk about the economy, and I think the day that we bailed out corporations is the day we failed as a nation. Because, if we're supposed to be in this capitalist society that we're proclaiming to be, those companies should have failed. And the problem was, the backstory, allegedly, is a lot of the banks, as well as the companies, held a lot of our nation's stability in their constructs. So when they failed, we were somehow, our government was entwined with it anyways. Kind of loosely putting it. And personally, I would rather see, is that some kind of sacrilegious in a way, but I would rather watch General Motors fail than to see billions of dollars of tax money being dumped over there. And not only that, but if you read the recent report, they sold to Fiat, I think it was, and they sold it for a loss at a couple of $1 billion. And so with the current economic situation that we're in now, I see that America is kind of back to more of, as they say, a socialist state. But I don't think it really is. But I think it's trying to do the good things, but in a bad way.
All right, Ron, I'm trying to process what you said. I don't know if everybody else is having the same issue hearing you that I am. It might just be my Skype connection. I heard a lot of what you said. I was able to actually make out the syllables, but I've got to take a minute here and kind of wrap my mind around. I mean, the first real thing here that's a pressing question to me is, why isn't anybody doing anything about this if that is in fact what happened? What's going on? You know, what impedes people from acting, I guess, is what I'm trying to figure out.
Stepping up anymore, we're waiting for things to get done for us. And we went from an industrious nation to a consumer nation, and we're expecting services and goods. And unfortunately, that mindset probably carries over for our self-reliance.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, what do we do? That's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, the jobs that, you know, we used to do that gave us that industrious ability have been now outsourced, you know, out of the country for the most part. There are very few actual factories in comparison to products. You know, if you take and you put the number of products that Walmart carries and the number of factories in the United States and the individual products that they actually produce, I mean, how do those two things line up? Because I see the Walmart just in a landslide.
Speaking of, I'm still coming in correctly or not, but if I am, I'll call right back and see if we get a better connection. But as for Walmart, I bump into a gentleman who his job is that to actually close Walmarts. And what they do is they close them, recycle everything that can be recycled, and then they sell the whole plot of the property in the building. And that's his division of Walmart. So as Walmart builds, they also, close up and bail out. And you can tell someone was telling me, they were from Idaho, I think it was, and they were saying that you can tell when the economy is bad is when Walmart packs up their bags and leaves town.
Yeah, that's it's kind of comical in a way, but sad that it's true. What is absolutely amazing to me is, from my standpoint, maybe it's just my age, but Walmart in particular represents what I think it was the final straw to snap on the camel's back, you know. They came in and they offered goods at a much cheaper price than what, you know, mom and pop shops could do. And they continued to undercut and, you know, dribble down the profit margin, to kind of eliminate their competition, so to speak. And then it seems like once the community's drained, once the community no longer has those, you know, mom and pop shops to, you know, bring the money back into Walmart, then they do. They pack up their bags and leave.
Well, I think with the story of Walmart, initially started buying stuff locally, and they started outsourcing to China and other second and third world countries, supporting their economy. So yeah, you can get a good deal, but everything is made not in America. Where when they first started off, it was, you know, pro-American and pro-American economy. And so I think, you know, as much as you get a good deal at Walmart, it's kind of like buying a Toyota. You know, you buy a nice car, but you're also supporting another country and supporting our country. So, yeah.
Right on. Ron, yeah, you're still crackling on my side, man. So if you want to go ahead and call back,
that's
good. Sounds good. Hopefully we get a better connection. All right, in the meantime, anybody else, you know, I know that this is just kind of a one-sided conversation, and, you know, there might be other people with different perspectives, so I want to encourage everybody to call in, 347-989-1371. You know, I'm not really necessarily trying to point the finger, I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what prevents us from kind of walking away from everything that we're fucking dealing with right now. You know, I know that the satanic dogma or whatever would be, responsibility for the responsible. But, I mean, let's face it, you're responsible to yourself before you're responsible to your debt, if that makes sense. So if you're not having trouble making ends meet at home, you know, for basic, you know, necessities, shelter, food, you know, gasoline, because you got to get to your job, you know, air conditioning, you know, especially in the state of Florida, you know, you got to have air conditioning. I'm assuming Texas has got to be the same way. I'm sure there are many other states out there, but, you know, when you're just barely getting the basic things that you need to turn around and, worry about who you owe money to, it just becomes a ridiculous notion, and it's a sad thing like that. We've got Ron French back in the line, so I'm going to go ahead and cue him up here and see if we've eliminated the problem.
Hey, testing 1, 2, 3. You hear me now?
Yeah, you sound much better now, man.
I called like 4 times. Every time I called, the answering machine would come on, and it would come crackling, so I had to wait till I get a good call, you know, good clarity.
Right on. Yeah, I'm wondering if that's what's happened to Dan Dredd, or maybe he just, I don't know, he might... You know, might have been out of ideas for topics and a little worried that I, didn't have one, so.
Well, this is open mic night, so the economy seems to be a big discussion across the board, actually, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I just, you know, I've really been sitting there looking at it, man, and normally I'm the kind of guy that if I'm out and about and I light a cigarette and a homeless guy will walk up to me and ask me for a cigarette, unless I'm like really strapping or hurt, it's usually not a big deal to hand them a cigarette. And the other day, I found myself actually aggravated because I was asked 3 times in a row.
By the end of the day, you had no pass.
Yeah.
$5.
It's what I'm saying. And I just got to thinking about it. And I was like, well, you know, some of these guys, they're completely responsible for being there. But what about the guys that don't? What about the guys that fucked up a couple of times, you know, and made a couple of bad choices or whatever, and they just never could get their record clear? I have a friend who, he was wrongly imprisoned for something years ago. Well, at this point, it's got to have been 15, 16 years ago. But because that's on his record, he really can't do much. And the truth be told, he didn't do anything wrong in the first place. I know because I was there with the guy the whole night, but that wasn't enough. So,
right.
What's that?
I said, yeah, I'm agreeing with you. No, because I got friends like that too, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying every guy out there deserves to, you know, had their story heard and be given some kind of sympathetic empathy, you know, but using some common sense that, you know, not everybody out there in the world is a bad guy. And one of the things that actually, the past few seasons when we've been doing our hiring, that's been, I don't know, really sticking out to me is that I could take 100 applications and only 15 of them will actually have backgrounds good enough to work in a seasonal fireworks business. Now, that's credit and criminal record.
Wow. They do a credit check for fireworks?
Yeah. For a temporary seasonal job, you get to work no more than 3 weeks for this company, but you'd better have damn good credit and you better have a decent background. Now, it's not even so much... It's not even so much about the background part of it as it is about the credit part of it.
Well, I was going to say, well, the foreclosures and the real estate crashing, good luck on that one. Even if it, you know, I don't know what they were paying for a seasonal job, but you figure, I mean, if you're paying someone, what's ballpark, $8 to $10 an hour, and you have to pass a credit check, and you just lost your home to a foreclosure because you went upside down on your mortgage. I mean, that's kind of silly, you know. But I'm sure there's a reason for it. I understand banks do it because it's you're dealing with money and there's a credit risk thing. But
right.
You know, every business is different.
Well, the reason for it, Ron, is very simple. The reason for it is that if you're in a major amount of debt, the chances of you stealing something go up exponentially. Now, I don't know what the exact figures of it are, but I do know that that is one of the reasons why it happens at this level. And just so you know, it's minimum wage these people are going to work for. It's not even $8 to $10 an hour.
Wow. Well, I can see where you know, theft could be a concern, but that's incredible. I never thought the standard would be set kind of high. You know, I mean, I've heard some other jobs like that too, where you would think like a 7-Eleven or a Circle K, the hiring practices would be a lot, lean or lax. But in reality, you go through a lot just to get through the door.
Just to get through the door. What is kind of amazing to me is by not hiring people who are in debt, you're encouraging them to steal. So ultimately, you're kind of setting up a self-defeating practice. You know, you're just lining the dominoes up, knowing that they're going to eventually knock into it, knock them all over.
Well, if you think about it, those who are qualified for the job are probably overqualified, won't stay there for too long anyway.
Right on. Now, Ron, being we live in the same state, you can kind of back me up on this, but I'm 34 years old and a white male who did not go to college or did not come from a wealthy background. Statistically,
right.
At my age, I should have gone to jail at least once, right?
Well, yeah, considering the state builds about 10 prisons a year.
Yeah, we
have a high crime rate down here. And, statistically speaking, some places are more prone for crime or your stereotypical, if you're not a cop, you're in jail type of thing.
Right. I mean, that's exactly, the way it seems is almost as if the laws are being set in such a way that the judicial system can make money. I mean, because these people who commit these crimes, quote-unquote crimes, they have to pay for them. It's not like they just, get a smack on the wrist, go to jail for a few years. It costs you financially up front while you're doing it. And then afterwards, it costs you the ability to make money. So,
no, I know what you're saying. I have a buddy of mine who he has to wear a scarlet letter for a long time now, and he has his own story, so I can't whitewash anything that his crime was. But he found it to the point where he couldn't work anywhere, and if he did, he got hassled or had a hard time. So. Unfortunately, he actually had to go and he committed himself, and now he collects Social Security because of it. And to me, I thought that was a waste because the guy is a genius. He's a mechanical engineer, and he already has a provisional patent, but yet he can't do anything with it because of his criminal history and, and the fact that they, I hate to say the word, like hold him down, but that'd be another topic because in this case, a lot of the crimes that people are doing, you're starting to wear more and more, you're being punished even after you serve your time, but again, that could be another topic. But you're right. Basically, American with a credit history background, it seems as though people are being set up to fail. I think that's where you're getting at with the, applying for the jobs and stuff, because a lot of people who can't get a job have to resort to crime, or at least they think they do. And my attitude is don't think, if you're going to think about robbing a store, I would rather find a way to make my own, my own money, start my own company, do my own business. And I've been a freelancer for years. That's why I started my own company. And I was not flourishing at the moment, but I'm still my own boss, but I have my ups and downs like everybody else. So, I took that route because you're right. Stereotypically, I should be in jail as well in a way,
Right on. So real quick here, I'm going to go ahead and we've got another caller. We're going to go ahead and put them on and see what they got going on. So 319 area code, you're listening to the news.
Hello?
Hello?
You guys hear me?
We can.
Hello. I'd just like to say I'm a big fan of you guys' program. I've been listening to you for a while now. I can't remember how long it's been, but you guys, good radio program, probably one of my favorites on here. But getting more on the subject, I was reading Genesis the other day and in the Bible, and the Bible, especially in Genesis, says that society as today needs to respect Howard Stern's penis more and kill niggers.
That's wonderful. I'm glad that that's written in there. What verse did you cite again?
I said we need to respect Howard Stern's penis more as a society today.
No. I mean, like, what you said it was in Genesis, but you didn't say what chapter or what verse.
Chapter 2 in the Rick James version.
In the Rick James version. That's awesome.
Rick James.
Uh-huh.
Right on. Very nice. So, caller, definitely lighten up the mood a little bit here, huh?
Hail Satan.
Right on. Where are you hailing us from, man?
Hail Satan.
Iowa.
Hail Satan.
Area code 319 is Iowa.
Go Hawks. Go Hawkeyes.
Awesome. Right on. So, anything else on your mind? I mean, the Bible lessons, appreciate it for sure, but
Jesus sucks.
Sounds interesting. All right. Well, thanks for calling in, bro.
Blow me, faggot.
Oh, that was original.
Yeah. I'm not really sure what the deal was with that, but that's wonderful. It doesn't surprise me. You try to hold some kind of a conversation with serious weight, and we quickly have to, I don't know, find a way to unwind it.
And I did a trace on the 319, and it's just basically it's an Iowa extension or area code. I don't know anyone from Iowa. Do you?
I have no idea, man. Whatever. Hung
that
up.
It could be a Blog Talk Radio person popping in and, you know, saying what's up. Oh, well, so would be.
That's great. I mean, at least we started off with some good pops, you know. He listens to the show all the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, I what do you expect? He was having his fun. He had it. Time to move on.
Right on. Where were we before we got that Bible lesson?
Oh, the Rick James version.
Yeah, the Rick James version. You have to have that.
I actually kind of inspired me. I wanted to go off and get a copy of a Bible or print it out and have a Rick James labeling on it and stuff. And, you know, I'll email it to you.
Sounds awesome. I think that book, that Bible right there, might actually make lots of money.
Yeah. Chapter 1, cocaine is a bitch.
Chapter 2, do what you want.
Well, we were talking before this gentleman called. We're talking about the how people are overqualified for a lot of the jobs, and obviously it creates a high turnover. And those who aren't qualified, seemingly, when stereotypically, would want to cause or create a criminal havoc, if you would. And like I said, my route, I have the worst credit. You know, I got student loans. I have. I had a car repoed a while back and all this other stuff. So, you know, my credit's not the best. And that's fine. And that kind of drove me into being an entrepreneur. But I also been a freelancer for about 10 years where I work in the stagehand crafts, anywhere from rock concerts, Broadway shows, and what have you. And then I just started doing my own audiovisual company. And so far, you know, I'm not complaining. I enjoy it.
Well.
So, the two things in my life that I grew up with that were my strong points, if they were, was studying of different religions and religion, and also technology. I remember as a kid growing up, you know, Dad bought a stereo system, you know, component stereo system for the house, and he spent hours trying to figure it out. He went out to get a beer or go to the bathroom, and he wouldn't let me touch it. So when he took off, I hopped in, and 10 minutes later, the stereo was all put together. So, you know, I knew what my strengths were back then, so I went off and made a career out of it.
Right on.
So, you know, and I think what it is, people who think desperate act desperate. And to quote a gentleman named Cat Williams, not that I'm endorsing smoking illegal substances, but he says there's a case of fuck it when you get stoned. And being sober-minded, I had my own development of fuck it. And I said, well, I can worry about shit, or I can find a solution to dealing with the shit that's at hand. And that was my solution. Not to get too preachy about it, but, you know, that was how I dealt with it, with my situation.
Right.
Maybe it could, you know, expound to some other people's lives, you know?
Well, see, hold on, 941-619, that would be Jason Terrell, maybe? Hang on, no, Zach.
No, that's Zach.
Right on, let me throw that on. Graybush.
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing tonight?
Doing all right.
Jack, Jack.
Good. You know, I'm just listening, guys. Go ahead and hang up with me. I'm working. Just want to tune in and see what the fuck's going on.
It's just open discussion, man. Dredd's missing in action, so hopefully he's not in prison.
Yeah, well, you know, there's some fat, hungry people waiting for the pizza, so I'm just, you know, tuning in, you know, just you know, listening to y'all.
Right on.
I want my slice. I want my slice.
Wait a minute. What do you want on yours? Matt, where do you live in? Like north of L.A.? Yeah, it'll be there about 4 hours. Cold.
Nice.
And it's not
nice
free. I'm charging you double.
Oh, no tip for you. No tip.
Right on, man. Well, we'll let you go back to just listening. So, enjoy your pizza. All right, Zach's back muted again. You know, the thing of it is, why? I mean, first, I understand what you mean about, you know, going out and being your own boss and, you know, trying to start your own business and handle things on your own accord. But what strikes me here is why we continue to play this game anyway. I mean, what says that you have to go to work and make money? What says that that's what you need to be focused on, is making money?
Well, I think there's the things that compound up to that point. You know, if you get a house, you have a mortgage. You have a car, you have a car payment and car insurance. You have taxes, you have house insurance, you have, you know, everything kind of compiled onto itself. I mean, initially, I remember years ago, I thought I could afford a home until I found out, oh, yeah, property tax will cost you another $2,000 to $4,000 a year, and your house insurance is going to cost you another $2,000 to $4,000 a year. Next thing you know, you're spending another, you know, almost $6,000 to $10,000 a year on top of what your mortgage is. You know, and by that time, what you're thinking is $600 a month becomes, like, say, $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 a month, and you're budgeted mentally just for the $600. So you have all these different, you know, compounded issues. I try to escape from the traditional mindset. I try to, you know, I've been fighting against the, you know, the curve or the Stepford wife syndrome of, this is how you're supposed to be, this is where you're supposed to go, this is what you're supposed to get. And because you're kind of living by the definition of others rather than defining yourself, or, you know, being your own person or your own man, if you would. And so, you know, to me, it's a struggle because, you know, it's a single journey. It's a solitary journey. And a lot of people don't take it. You know, not many people will go for that.
Right.
Yeah. You
know? Well, I agree with everything that you said there. What I'm kind of pointing to is the fact that we think that things have to cost money, or that, I mean, we know things cost money, but we think that it has to be that way. You know what I'm saying? I saw a real good example actually on forums of what I'm talking about by, it was posted up by Jake or Dark Rider on Sin, and that's about all I'm going to really say there. But what he said was, you know, hi John, thanks for building me a house. You know, take this couple of barrels of carrots and come back.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see, you saw that?
I glanced over it. It was kind of like the Star Trek theory where everybody has some type of utopia, communal living thing, right?
Right. The idea here is that if you went on producing because it was something you enjoyed doing, I mean, because let's face it, it wouldn't be very long, everybody sitting around watching Donahue or some shit, before they would want to get up and do something productive with their time. Otherwise, they'd drive themselves crazy and be all up in each other's business. And we're kind of actually hoping that this becomes the case, because those that do become obsessed with that kind of thing will kill themselves off quickly and leave the rest of us alone. But, I myself would have to do something productive with myself for the day. I would have to create something, make something, build something. What's that?
I don't know. It's just funny you should mention that. I had a leather hobby business. I used to sell wholesale to 5 different adult shops for the S&M products I used to make. And just recently I blew off the dust off the workbenches, because, you know, my business is kind of on a lull right now and I needed to make money. So I was like, all right. So I went off and I made about 20 floggers and I put them on Etsy and on eBay. So, yeah, I mean, I know you're saying, if you can't find work to make money, for instance, you can create your own work or create your own thing. I mean, if you look at Jason, he's a tattoo artist and he has a bunch of, you know, gadgets and whatever, you know. And for me, I mean, if I trip over shit in the house, I just take a picture of it and throw it on eBay and sell it. You know, I'm a kind of like a hoarder. I collect shit. So for me, it's not too hard just to look up or look down and grab something and put it on eBay. And ironically enough, it has a value.
Right on. But that's precisely what I'm saying. What the point I'm saying is that you're doing this right now to get money, instead of just doing it because it's what you enjoy doing, you know.
That's why I said with the leather shop, I'm the same way. I mean, I like making the leather goods I make, and I also used to be a chainmail armorer, and I used to make shirts and necklaces and wallet chains and bracelets and what have you. And that actually was kind of like something I did as a pastime. And ironically enough, I did that as a hobby business too, you know, selling to goth kids and whatnot at the goth bar.
Why not?
So I know you're saying there's something doing for pure enjoyment and then still being productive. I did it for, you know, as a self-sustaining hobby. And it worked out pretty good for while it did it.
Yeah.
You know, and in fact, I'm kind of going back into it. Because of my free time, I'm, you know, if I'm not doing anything, it's either you stare at the ceiling and go crazy, or get up, you know, you're tired of doing that, so you get up and you do shit, and that's what I've been doing.
Right on. Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Is we will take action if there's no action to be taken. You know, if we don't have direction, we will take our own action. And what I think's interesting about that, you put that with the utopian idea of a moneyless society, you know, if everybody's working to create things, then it just becomes a matter of, you know, creating them where they need to be created. And, you know, before you know it, you've got a self-sustained living environment. I realize I'm like a, maybe even a national level, I'm going to say even a statewide level, that this might not be an ideal notion, but in a smaller community, this type of environment functions very well. Go for it.
Well, look at the Amish, or even in Native Americans, you know, just prior to the white man coming by and taking over the place. You know, the Native Americans, they had a job for everybody. If you're an elderly person, you took care of the little kids. You know, if you're the woman, you know, stereotypically you did the woman stuff. And if you're a man, you were the warrior. You were going off and killing shit and eating it, you know, or fighting wars with the other tribes. And in a more modern primitive would be like the Amish community. You know, they limit themselves on their ability to be modernized, so they still have sewing machines or hand cranked or with a tradle. They still do things that are considered a little bit too old school, you know, turn of the century, 1800s, 1900s. But they're self-sustaining. And I think that's a big word, is self-sustaining. If the power went off on the grid, a lot of people here would shit themselves. If the internet went off, the grid. A lot of people would shit themselves. I think a lot of people are used to having services handed to them rather than providing their own service.
Right. And that's exactly it. One of the conversations that I've had with my better half here lately is the idea that, you know, pretty soon it's going to become relatively impossible to break or to buy and replace this shit that easily breaks now. I mean, like, TVs are relatively cheap in price in comparison to wages if you were to think of how they were back in, say, the mid-1980s. You know, you can get a 50-inch TV for around $700 or $800 flat screen now. Where back in those days, it would have been like a $1,500 TV, and the damn thing weighed a fucking brick and a half.
Oh, yeah, you can go further back on that one. I mean, people appreciated a 12-inch TV, and the whole family got together and sent a living room to watch this little TV. I mean, now, today, we have a TV in every room, bathroom, kitchen, too.
And so this is exactly what I'm saying, is it's easy enough to buy things cheaply to replace them now that you don't have to worry about having them fixed. So they're not being built with the idea that somebody's going to come behind them and fix them. You know, but we're going to have to learn how to do this kind of stuff here in the near future. I mean, things are not going to get better. I don't care what smoke the fucking person on TV or the news article that you're reading blows up your ass. Things are not going to get better until we say enough of this shit. So,
well, stick on the TV thing. Back in the day, my great grandmother had a TV that was a hybrid of circuits and tubes, and she called my dad to have her TV fixed, and we had to go to an old electronics shop and buy a certain amount of tubes, come back in and change out the tubes, and that's how you fixed your TV. You know, because the tubes would go. You know, and it wasn't the most energy proficient thing you could get, obviously, if you're running TVs on tubes, but that's how you fixed your TV. But there are a couple of old-school TV repair shops nearby, and when I talk to them about repairs of certain types of TVs, like our flat screens and what have you, they would they'll quote you a price, and if you look at the price of your repair, if you look at your TV as an investment rather than as a toy or a form of entertainment, but as an investment, so you spend $600 to get, you know, to have it. And 2 days after its warranty, it shits to bed, and you go to a TV repair service, and they say it's going to cost you $400. By the time the TV crapped out and the time it's going to cost you $400 to repair it, that TV is probably worth $400, and it's just easier for you to buy a brand-new TV for $400. So, you know, so we're, like I said, we're a consumer nation, and unfortunately, we're also a very throwaway of our stuff. That's why I like the shows on Discovery, where you have that guy who restores stuff from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, because those machines were designed to last a long time, and obviously, you know, if you get a 1950s refrigerated Coca-Cola you know, refrigerator bar or something. Well, you know, that shit was for real, and once that's restored, I mean, it's still real. They're still working, and you have a better appreciation for the hands-on craftsmanship of our industrial age, which is pretty much over now. And unfortunately, I think we lost touch to that, and we became expendable. We buy things just to throw it away now.
Imagine this for a second. Imagine that America adopts the same attitude that they took in the 20th century with the, you know, the repair of things and taking pride in their craftsmanship. I mean, wouldn't you think that even if we continue to technologically advance, if we worked towards, you know, the quality craftsmanship and worked towards things that were going to last a long time, wouldn't you think that that would be a situation that would enable us to go further in terms of, you know, what do I want to say, in terms of leaps in technology and the advancement of technology?
I think it would help us, but again, I think we're too complacent of a society. We are a goods and services nation now. You know, we say consumer nation, but we're goods and services. And basically, if you can afford something, you pay for it rather than, you know, appreciate the product that you have. You just buy it, and like I said, you kind of buy it just to throw it away. This is how I see it. Because you appreciate something, but we always have a novelty. There's always the one up, and so you get the new cell phone, you get the new video game. You know, ironically enough, I still have the old Coleco and the old Ataris, you know, back at my parents' house. So, you have an appreciation of it. In fact, sometimes very nostalgic, people buy stuff that are old, and ironically, is a new economy for collectibles. You know, Rock'em Sock'em, you know, Knockout Robots, you know, some board games, shit like that are now almost worth their weight in gold. And but that's a generational thing. I remember growing up for not the Dean Martin show, but a lot of stuff that was referenced with like Dean Martin in the 70s, and you know, based on the 60s programming. And but again, everything has a generational thing, and I think part of the issue is being you're 34 and I'm 41, and this era, this generation, you know, we're seeing things change not for the better. And I think what it is we can reflect back 10, 15 years ago how things were versus now, and we can see the decline. And if you can imagine, if we talk to somebody who's 10, 15, or 20 years ahead of us, they could even tell, you know, they could even add a bigger input to this program about what they see as a big change for the better and the worse. And like I said, right now, I think, honestly, America needs to fall flat in its face and then bring itself back up. I think right now we're fighting a heart attack and not waiting to die to get resuscitated.
Right. Well, here's the thing, man. America, in my opinion, is flat on its face. I mean, that we know of, and this is people that they're still counting because they're counting for so long of a distance. But that we know of, 10% of America right now is unemployed. And when you sit and think about that number, there's what, somewhere between 4 and 6 million people, or something like that, or no. Between, I think it's actually more like 55 million for some reason. Whatever the number is, and I'm throwing it out there, it's in the millions. You take 10% of that, that's 100,000 per $1 million. So if it's 4 or 5, that's still, you know, 400,000, 500,000. If it's 55, you know, what does that make that number? And we're already flat on our face, and this is only, you know, people who've been unemployed for up to 3 years. They, you know, there are some people who have been unemployed for so long that they don't even count them in that, those statistics.
Well, currently, Florida's at 10.6%.
Yeah, well, I know the nation, as of June of 2011, is roughly 9.6% or something like that for the entire country. So that means Florida stands a little higher in the average. What kind of blows me away about this is that Florida is an agricultural state. There, you know, there should be a ton of food being produced right now. And that should be generating jobs. I mean, people around the world have to fucking eat, right?
Well, we're losing our asses right now, ironically, in orange juice sales. They're actually having issues selling oranges. I hate to say it, I make the comparison, but it's like gasoline. If you're buying a gallon of orange juice at $6 a gallon, you know, you got more money than me. And so Americans basically have a different economic viewpoint on things. If we're not going to be able to afford it, we're not going to buy it anymore. And ironically enough, you know, orange juice went to the wayside. And Florida is a huge orange grower. You know, if we're not importing it from Brazil or other places in South America, you know, it's basically it's Florida or California. And right now, there was a big news on. Well, you're not too far from my house, so Channel 9 News, for instance, on Bay News, they talk about having oranges. Orange growers are having a hard enough time selling their oranges. So, you know, you would think that, but I think what it was is we had issues. We had a drought or something, but it drove the prices up, and then when they drove the prices up, no one was buying it. Now they have a reserve, and they can't get rid of it if they tried.
Right. So something I saw a little bit on today, and I'm not really sure what it was I was watching, but it was something that Nikki had on, and I looked up, and there was this diagram, and I was like joking, oh, look, they're talking about how to build the Star Trek Enterprise, right? Well, instead, it turns out that what this device is, it went on, I think, a 1939 Studebaker, which, you know, back then they got, what, like 6 miles to the gallon or something like that?
All right.
This was a steam-injected carburetor. It gave this car over 200 miles to the gallon, or over 100 for sure, but I think it was over 200 miles. I didn't really catch the statistics entirely because of what was going on, but what that then pointed to me is the guy who came on immediately after was a jet mechanic. That's what he did for a living. And he had a regular car, one of them gas suckers from the 70s. You know what I'm talking about. It doesn't matter what brand you pick there. They all drank gasoline like homeless people drink Bush beer.
Right on.
But he himself decided after hearing about this that he was going to go ahead and try with his car to do this, and with minimal effort was actually able to convert his car to do the same thing. What really struck me on this was that these things were built in such a way that modification of them to improve their performance was readily available for anybody who was willing to just think outside of the box and implement it.
Are you talking steam or HHO or hydrogen?
It was steam. That's what it was said to be in the
program
that I was watching. It was steam.
It was a
Studebaker that went over like 160 miles to the gallon or something like that.
No, because I know currently, I remember back in the 70s we had a problem with the oil organization. You went from like 20 cents a gallon to 80 cents and caused a national uproar. People were converting their cars into propane because propane was still abundant and inexpensive. And
right.
people are doing that modification now. People are doing a buddy of mine over in Fort Myers, he has a fuel cell where he takes hydrogen out of water, which is a type of osmosis. And he said it adds about another 5 or 15 miles a gallon on his pickup truck when he drives. And so there are a lot of alternative means going on as of now, but it's not catching on. And ironically enough, some states are actually having it illegal to do so. I know in Massachusetts, if you are caught with an SVO, a straight vegetable oil, or you have your own biodiesel fuel, you'll be arrested on the spot for producing your own fuel, which is because you're avoiding the fuel tax of that state.
I see. Yeah. I wasn't even really getting to all the problems that go with it, because this Studebaker, the patent for the carburetor that went on, it was actually bought by Shell Gas, according to the program that I was watching. So.
Okay.
But what I was pointing to was the fact that when we as people have to put our hands on things to repair them or to make them work, once we start to study them and learn them, we're inclined to every once in a while creatively find something to do to improve its performance, that we naturally propel our technology ourselves. Now, the reason that these things haven't been implemented is obvious, because it's not profitable for the main company to, you know, build things in such a manner that you can do this with ease. So I guess what I'm saying is that as a society, our focus on this profit is the problem. Our focus on the mentality of creating a profit or coming up, you know, coming up with more of something than what you need, it's a problem. Go ahead.
This is where I see where we should fall on our face. If General Motors was to shut out, I mean, literally just go and claim either bankruptcy or close their doors and say, okay, we're done. they had plants all over America. And what would stop, sorry, if you had seven plants in America, I don't know how many plants there are in General Motors, but there were several of them. And General Motors, you know, said, okay, we're done. We have no more money. That's it. Sorry, guys, you collect unemployment. To me, I see that as an opportunity to create seven new vehicle companies, or even import vehicle companies if we have to do so, because we do that now with Hyundai and with Toyota. But if you had, like, say, Tata, which is an Indian company, you know, they came over and they produced a $2,500 vehicle for the people. And we also had other alternative vehicles out there, like there's a three-wheeled electric vehicle and a hybrid vehicle. The hybrid vehicle does 300 miles to the gallon. And, you know, these plants can be readily available, you know, for these other types of alternative vehicles. And that can be as equally profitable, if not more profitable. And not only that, but it's been divided up to several different plants with several different companies. But I kind of look at it with a naivety, because I don't know the true business of the automotive industry, but that's how I see it, outside looking in.
Right on. Well, with just a couple minutes left, you know, my whole point here is, do we need to continue to focus on representing ourselves with this external symbol, the dollar bill? Or would it be better if we represented ourselves with our own work and our own diligence and our own accomplishment? You know, does that need to come in the form of a certificate of any kind? I mean, whether it's a bar of gold or a pound of food, shouldn't the reward itself be the fact that you can do it?
Well, to quote a bumper sticker I saw, do not steal. The government does not like competition.
Right on. Now,
and go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, personally, I think that, you know, the people at our level should start creating mayhem and problems. I mean, when what happens is with a child, when you don't listen to them or don't really understand what they want, they get frustrated because they've tried
to scream.
They start screaming and acting a fool, and that's generally the only way that they can get attention. Well, you know, they want to treat us like a child. Let's behave like one.
Well, I think they are allowing it because currently they're it's been on the news media that they're actually having more 20 or 40,000 armed servicemen to increase security inside our nation, which means is we're actually are slowly but surely having a police state installed.
Right, and that's with 90 seconds to go, Ron. That's a whole other issue and a whole other open discussion.
Next Friday.
Sounds like a plan, man.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for calling in, Ron. All right. For those of you folks who, tuned in tonight, don't forget to check us out tomorrow night on The Ooze. This time, it'll be Jason Sorrell and I, and we will be discussing, 60 seconds to go here. We'll be discussing Anonymous tomorrow night. So, if you can't tell, The Ooze has been heavily themed this year. Let's go ahead and roll the outro, and we'll talk to you guys all tomorrow night.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but it's the old expression goes. Tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk Radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?
All this potential, and I see it squandered. God damn it, an entire generation pumping gas, waiting tables, slaves with white collars.